Now, Dave Kaufman hosts The Kaufman Show with Dave Kaufman, but also Jay Farrar. The Kaufman Show, only on TSN 690.
It's the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, right here on your home for the Habs, TSN 690. What's up, Mr. F?
Hey.
How are you?
Hey, I'm very well. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm great. That song pumps me up every single time.
It is. It's the adrenaline is flowing.
Good.
My endorphins have gone into my brain, and now I feel like doing backflips.
About damn time.
I'm doing a backflip right now, Dave. Right. No, I'm not going to do one.
We don't have the medical coverage for you to be performing backflips.
In the same shape that I used to. Like I could ever do a backflip.
You're so limber, Jay.
Yes.
How are you, man? Everything good?
I'm very well.
Good.
Yes.
Good. Enjoyed the game tonight?
The third period.
Third period was the best period.
Yes, it was. It was a quirky game. From the puck traveling into the bench and Carey Price making the glove save. Did you see that?
No, I did not.
Yeah, the puck went right to the bench and Carey Price caught it
with
his glove.
I feel bad that Carey had any responsibilities tonight. He was looking rough, very ashen sitting there on
that
bench.
Well, he had a piece of that shutout.
Well,
even the bench was making saves on the Hurricanes tonight.
Well, mad props to Ned Flanders in Nets tonight with another big game.
That's yeah, what
two
is
in a
that?
Row. He's got Ned Flanders on his mask. It's wonderful.
And it looks like Harrison Ford on the other side.
Really?
I guess not.
I haven't caught. I've only seen one side.
Why do you know what the significance of that is? Why he has?
I'm assuming he's a very good Christian.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. You tell me.
I don't know.
Who is Ned Flanders?
Is his wife dead?
Who
I don't know.
What God.
Well, I don't know why. Why? We have to ask these questions.
I hope that's not why.
Well, I hope
Ned
not either. No,
his...
I didn't say I hoped
I
it.
Could
I
think
just...
of there are several widows that you could look up to with more aplomb than Mr. Flanders.
Right.
Diddly, doodly, diddly.
Yeah, she wasn't nice, huh?
Don't speak ill of dead cartoon characters,
I'm
Jay.
Sorry. No scruples.
We've got a big show tonight, and we're going to basically jump right into it. Our first guest is around the corner. Well, not really. He's in Arizona. But we're going to get him on the phone right now. We're going to be joined off the top of the show by Chad Cordero tonight. You remember Chad when he was closing games for the Expos in late 2003 and all of 2004. He then went down to Washington with the team and kicked some serious ass. Led the league
All-Star.
In saves, went to the All-Star game.
Yep.
45 saves, I believe, in a year.
Yeah, incredible.
And had some shoulder trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And bounced around a bit, went to the Toronto minor league organization, and realized that he needed to rehab. And the chances were slim at that point that Chad Cordero was going to get back. But he always kept that positive attitude, and he worked his butt off. And the last time we spoke to him, he was about to go to Japan to train with the former, the guy that worked for the Expos. The
right.
former trainer that worked for the Expos and worked for the Nationals.
Right.
I think he had started off as Tomo Oka's translator, this guy. And obviously, Chad Cordero...
You got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, you got to work your way to the top.
Yeah.
Chad Cordero made his way to Japan, and obviously, whatever magic they worked over there, it worked, because he's feeling good and got signed to a spring training invite by his hometown team, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. So let's bring in Chad Cordero. Hey, Chad.
Hey, what's going on?
Welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Oh, it's a pleasure. When we saw the news last week, when you broke the news that you'd signed with the Angels, frankly, Jay and I had a conversation and said we have to speak to you again because we know what a hard road this has been for you.
Yeah, I mean, everything like as far as the signing goes, it happened so fast. I mean, it happened pretty much overnight, kind of. Like, I mean, I was, just working out, trying to stay in shape, trying to get my arm back ready to go, and then I was throwing bullpens, and then I threw in our alumni game at Cal State Fullerton, and my agent saw me, so he called the Angels, and within 2 days, I was signed. It was unreal how quickly it happened. I kept thinking that, I had to throw bullpens in front of teams, maybe go to an independent league and throw in some games there, and then all of a sudden, here are the Angels saying, yeah, we'll take him right on the spot without even seeing him. So I was like, I couldn't believe it.
So now you're in Arizona and you're working out with the Angels. Is it a minor league invite?
Yeah. Right now I'm in minor league camp. They have about 25 other minor leaguers here early. So I'm here working out with them. It's kind of weird. It's something new, and I've never gone straight to minor league camp before. So it's a new experience, but you know what? You got to start somewhere, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get back up there.
Well, of course you haven't been to minor league camp. You went straight from college to the bigs when you first broke in. You're doing things in reverse order, which I would imagine is making you quite humble in turn.
Yeah. I mean, it takes some getting used to, but I'm excited, I mean, I've been out of the game for so long, almost 2 years, and you know what? I got to start somewhere, and I have to work my way back up to the top just like everybody else. And right now I'm just a normal minor leaguer and paying my dues and doing whatever it takes to get better.
How has this changed your mechanics? Obviously with an injury, it was your shoulder, right?
Right, yeah. I tore my labrum, my lat, and my bicep all at the same time. So.
See, the labrum is one of those injuries that, the one example when that I can think of, the famous example in this town of somebody coming back from a torn labrum would be Rocky Biddle, the guy whose place you took. And
right.
It's not an injury that players, I think Dustin McGowan is another famous guy who returned from that injury, but it's not a frequent one, and it must completely change. How has it changed the way that you pitch or the way that you approach pitching?
Right. First of all, it takes. I think shoulders, as far as comebacks are concerned, I think about right now, I think 70% of the guys who have it don't ever come back.
Wow.
So, it's a very hard injury to come back from. Right now, it's at the point where Tommy John used to be with the elbow. When that surgery first started coming along, I think the success rate was pretty low. But now it's gotten to the point where it's pretty good, and a lot of guys are coming back from it. Even harder. So hopefully one day the shoulder, will be like that, where the surgery's gotten so much better that, guys are coming back at a better pace. But as far as pitching goes, I've had to become a whole different pitcher. I've never been a guy to blow up by guys, and I never had that 96 mile an hour fastball like Billy Wagner did. So I always had to rely on my location and my off-speed pitches. So basically when I got hurt, I really started focusing on my changeup a lot more. And when I made it back up in 2010 with the Mariners, that's what I relied on, and that's really the pitch that's gotten me to where I am now, able to make that comeback.
So it's not just the injury, then, it's age that makes one a smarter pitcher, right?
Right, exactly.
Like,
I mean,
reps.
It's age, experience. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, because I've been, you know, I mean, I'm only 30, but I mean, it sounds weird because I've been around so long. But, you know, I've gained a lot of experience. You know, I've learned what it takes to be successful. I learned what it takes to have, you know, to go through, you know, ups and downs. You know, I've had many ups and downs throughout my entire career. So, you know, you just kind of learn from experience. Learn from your mistakes. You know, because baseball is a game where, you know, the best hitters, you know, they get out 70% of the time. You know, so baseball is a game of failure. You just got to learn from it.
We're in conversation with former All-Star Chad Cordero on the Kaufman Show. Chad, did you grow up an Angels fan?
I wouldn't say I was an Angels fan. I enjoyed watching them. I went to many games when I was younger. I used to be able to walk around the field as a little leaguer for when they had Little League Day. But I grew up a Giants fan.
You know, oh, really?
Believe it or not. Like, yeah. So being from Southern California, that's kind of rare. But you know, my whole family were Giants fans, and so that's the team that I grew up rooting for. But the Angels were always my second team. You know, I mean, like I said, and we used to go to the games all the time because we only live 15 minutes away.
Well, I would like to be under the assumption right now that you're throwing lights out and you're going to make this team this year. And
yeah,
I mean, look at this roster. My goodness, if you can make this team, they're a favorite to win the World Series right now.
Yeah, I mean, to make this team, you know, or even come up, you know, halfway through the year, I mean, that would be unbelievable to come up, you know, play for a hometown team, you know, make my comeback in front of all my friends and family, and then play alongside guys like Pujols and Hamilton, you know, and Trout now. I mean, that would be something that would be so special, and, you know, hopefully, you know, sometime soon I'll be able to do that.
Have you gotten any word from the team as to what they're expecting out of you?
Not really. I mean, they're letting me go at my own pace. You know, they're not going to try and rush me. They're going to give me a chance to make the big league team out of spring training, from what I've been told. But it all depends on how I'm feeling. You know, they want to have me up there, but at the same time, you know, they don't want me to push myself too hard to where I end up getting hurt because my arm's not ready. You know, I've been out for 2 years, so. You know, for me, I got to make sure my arm is ready to compete it on an everyday level, so I have a chance to make that team. So, you know, I'm gonna take my time. I'm not gonna try and rush it. You know, I want to get back up there, but at the same time, you know, I want to make sure I do everything right.
It's great to hear your attitude. It's nice to know that you're gonna have to work to make this happen. That it's not just gonna be handed to you. And
right.
I would think that a lot of guys who've had the run that you've had would think that they're entitled to something, and it's nice, it's refreshing to hear that you know that you're not.
Oh yeah, thank you. I mean, because I mean, I've been, you know, like I said, I've been out for 2 years. You know, I haven't been the same pitcher since 2007, basically before I got hurt. So, you know, it's been a long time. You know, since I've had success. You know, so the game has changed a lot. So, you know, for me, I've got to do whatever it takes to get better. And you know, I can't rely on my past. You know, that's only gonna get me. So far, you know, so I got to go out there and work hard and start off wherever they want me to start off. You know, if they want me to start off in extended spring training, A-ball, AA, it doesn't matter. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get back up there.
How would you say that the game has changed?
It's just, you know, I think it's a different style. You know, you see guys like Trout and Harper, you know, who are going all out. You know, a couple of years ago, you know, it was hard to see guys, you know, not running out, you know, every day, you know, your average ground ball. Trout and Harper, I mean, they're busting, you know, every play, no matter what, no matter if they hit a routine, come back to the pitcher, you know, they're going at it full speed, and I think a part of that is how, you know, how much youth there is in baseball right now. So, you know, I think that's a good thing to see. You know, hopefully more guys will see that coming up to the minors, and you know, we'll see guys running out balls, you know, you know, on a routine basis. So, you know, it was hard to see some guys, you know, loaf it. So hopefully seeing guys like Trout and Harper, you know, running hard every play will hopefully catch on.
Chad, it's a story like yours that you know, you makes you believe that fiction is dead sometimes. And you know, you have Robert Redford and Dennis Quaid in The Natural and The Rookie. And when you make it up to the big show this year, which I know you will, who will play you in the movie? Who would be your choice? This is the kind of question that I ask.
Wow, bringing it.
I don't even know, really. I mean, I'm trying to think of a Mexican actor.
Yeah, well, I guess it would have to be. Well, we'll think of one later on, and maybe we'll put it out on Twitter and ask people who would be the best choice to play Chad Cordero.
I mean, to be fair, Daniel Day-Lewis can play anyone, right?
Maybe a little tall for Chad, though.
Well, Chad, we're all rooting for you. We're all rooting for you, and you know, we're going to be following your progress no matter where you end up at the start of the season, and hopefully in L.A. by the end of the season. And boy, if you have that opportunity to stop the Nationals from winning the World Series, I'm going to like you even more.
We'll be watching.
That'd be kind of weird, but I would look forward to it.
we appreciate the time as always, Chad, and thanks for being so good to the show, man. Anytime.
All right, thanks, guys.
Have a great night.
You too.
There he goes, the chief, Chad Cordero.
Yeah.
Still not bending his cap. And we wouldn't have it any other way.
No.
We would not have it any other way. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back. Is always complicated. Free and easy is overrated. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. You know, that's two segments in a row we're coming in on R. Kells.
Really?
Well,
we always
come in on R. Kells on the opening.
That's cheating, though. You can't really count that.
Well,
because it's not even the R. Kells anymore.
Well, I imagine that our next guest would take umbrage with that last comment.
It's the Kaufman Show theme now.
Well, I don't know. It was the opening song at the Air Canada Center.
As it should be. It should be the opening song for everything.
It pumps me up, man.
It does.
It pumps me up.
And it's awesome.
It sure pumped up the crowd in Toronto this week. I'm going to gush about the wonderful night that I had in Toronto on Valentine's Day without my Valentine, but about as much fun as one could have on Valentine's Day if you're not with your Valentine. Let's put it that way. Let's welcome in Kaufman Show basketball correspondent Max Kerman, who's also the lead singer of the R. Kells. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you, man?
Hey, I was your Valentine.
You were my Valentine.
Or Nick in our band. I don't know. One of us.
Well, and Tim. You guys can share me. There's a lot of love to go around. What can I say?
Gross.
Well, no, you did. You did come up to me right after the concert and say that I looked like the happiest person in the building.
You just have that big, classic Dave Kaufman grin on your face.
Yeah.
You just look like you're the happiest man in the world. It was a great night.
You know what, Max? People can hear that grin over the radio. That grin is very, I have no poker face. I can't hide that grin.
No, not at a Tragically Hip concert.
Definitely not. Or an R. Kells concert, man. You guys were great. It was a lot of fun, and it was a thrill for you guys to let me be a part of it, and I really appreciated it.
Oh no! You probably saw the best show of the whole tour.
Oh, good stuff!
Yeah, it was so much fun.
Well, I expect you guys to bring it equally at the Corona Theater on March 1st.
Ooh, yeah, we'll get to really stretch out and play a full set, and and party with you guys. It'll be great.
Should be a lot of fun. And in the meantime, there's some basketball to talk about. On Sunday, I was on Twitter, and all of the excitement on Twitter seemed to be around a basketball game in Hamilton, Ontario. Now, Max is from Hamilton, so I just sent him a text on the off chance, said, "You're not at the Wiggins game at Mac, are you?" And he wrote back, "Yep." Oh, I knew we had a guest.
I heard
at
it was a packed house. It was a packed house.
So this guy is, his name is Andrew Wiggins. He's 17 years old. He's from just outside of Toronto. And he's playing for a prep school in the States right now, made a triumphant return to Canada. And it sounds like he's the real deal, a player the likes of which Canada has never seen or produced. Right, Max?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. You know, there's been a lot of talk on the basketball message boards and people who follow college recruiting about Andrew Wiggins. And probably for like the last 2 years, he's been like the big prospect for probably what the 2015 NBA draft. He's been, you know, they've been, Team Canada's been scouting him since he was in grade 8 or grade 9. And he was incredible. He kind of plays a similar game to Tracy McGrady or Kevin Durant. He's right now he's about 6'8", 6'9". He's got like freakish athleticism, and the team he plays for now, it's a prep school in the States, and they were playing the Hamilton All-Stars, and it wasn't even a competition. He easily scored whenever he wanted to. He hit a three. He dunked on a bunch of people. He played really good defense. And you could tell it was just a man playing amongst a bunch of boys. And it was amazing. I've never seen something like this in Canada on a high school level, to see a sold out gym. We got there assuming we'd be able to find a seat, no problem. We were in the standing room only section. Bruce Arthur and Eric Kareen and Michael Grange, who are the big basketball writers in Toronto, they all came down to Hamilton for the show. I mean, for the game. There's the music terminology speaking.
But that's what it was. It was a show. I mean, it's pretty much the best description of it, right? It was the Andrew Wiggins show.
Totally. And Rowan Barrett, who played for Team Canada before, and now he's one of the coordinators of the team, he was there. So, it's really exciting because people have high hopes for him. And I think there's been other Canadians that have done well in college. But I think, there's players like Denham Brown, who played for UConn, who was like a really good college player and got drafted in the second round. But I think people maybe inflated his potential just because we were excited about him.
I think, LeMax, we saw that last year as well with Chris Joseph at Syracuse, who was drafted by the Celtics. And he's a Montreal kid, but I think he's in the D-League for Brooklyn now.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, Canadian basketball fans have been getting excited about prospects over the last 10 years, but there's been nothing as close to this level.
Well, and again, this feels, and reading Kareen and reading Bruce Arthur, and they're, it's not just about what he did, but it's Arthur went on this bit about him yawning, and how it showed that he's not, this is so far below him right now.
Yeah, he definitely for these kinds of games, I can imagine, in the NBA you have to bring it every single night. If you're a 17-year-old kid who has the talent that he has, and you're playing against much lesser competition, I imagine it'll be hard to get up for every single game. But, he's faced off against the other top talents in America, and he always comes out on top. There's a player in Chicago who's probably the other top high school player named Jabari Parker, who just committed to Duke. And in the two games that they played against each other, most of the scouts have said that Wiggins looks like the better of the two and has more upside. So, he's played for Canada on the junior teams and always looks really impressive. He's played in high school all-star games and he always looks really great. So, if you're playing a bunch of Hamilton all-stars, it's not something that you'd get too excited for if you're Andrew Wiggins.
Do we know where he might be going?
Yeah, well, it's actually quite interesting. He's being recruited by all the big schools like North Carolina and Kentucky and Kansas. But his father went to Florida State And his best friend, who's also a Canadian, who plays on Huntington, the prep school he goes to, has also committed to Florida State. So so insiders think that he could end up there, which would be a huge coup because Florida State isn't really known for being a basketball.
Charlie Ward, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? You're probably right. I know less about Florida State than you do, apparently.
I don't know. Honestly, Max, I don't know where I just pulled that out of, if that's true. I don't know where that just came out of. I have vague memories of him in a Florida State uniform and then playing for the Knicks. But again, I'm...
Wow.
I know. I'm the baseball guy, too.
I have an idea where you pulled that out of, but I'm not going to say it.
So, you know, I think for me that the reason I wanted to bring you on is obviously you saw him play in person. And I feel like this is one of those things where we can look back on this in years and it was, I saw him when. And you know, like if somebody had seen Sidney Crosby in a junior game or... you know, somebody much older than us with Wayne Gretzky at some backyard rink in Brantford. Did it get that kind of feel that you're going to remember this day for a long time?
You know, it really did. And I was really happy to have that moment, you know, on Canadian soil. Because I've seen some, you know, American high school basketball tournaments. I went down to North Carolina and saw a tournament there where there's another prep school called Oak Hill Academy. And they've produced players like Carmelo Anthony, and Rajon Rondo, and when I saw them play, they had a couple guys who went immediately to D1, Deron Lamb, who now plays for the Milwaukee Bucks. I saw him in high school, and it was really exciting, and it was in North Carolina, which is a big basketball state. But I didn't think I'd ever experience anything like that in Canada. And so, you know, during the player introductions, you know, he got a huge ovation. People were really excited, and he really came through. It wasn't like, I think he ended up shooting 10 of 13 from the floor. He ended up with 20-something points, 9 rebounds, 2 block shots. And so he really lived up to all the hype. So, you know, I'm really crossing my fingers because I think the future of Canada basketball looks pretty good if he's leading the charge.
Well, that's really exciting, Max. That's not something that we've heard very much over the radio. I can't remember the last time I was excited about – I would think we'd have to go back to the Sydney Olympics to the last time I was excited about Canada's basketball team.
Yeah, you know, Steve Nash is going to be playing a bigger role in the basketball operations, and Jay Triano is going to be involved. So, yeah, no, it's great. You know, the other thing I'd suggest to listeners, if they want to read up a little bit more, Sports Illustrated just came out with a huge feature on him a couple weeks ago. And I thought the article was actually a little bit mean-spirited, actually, towards Wiggins, and they kind of really questioned his motivation. They also questioned his father. His father played in the NBA in the 80s, and he was actually kicked out of the league for 2 years for cocaine use.
Wow.
So they reference that, and they say, you know, his father is just an unemployed former drug addict who's in charge of his son's career. And, you know, that's one way of framing it. I thought it was kind of unfair. But anyway, I think it's worthwhile to just give it a read because it kind of gives an interesting insight as to where Canada basketball is and how it's actually looked at on an international level. I thought it was interesting that Sports Illustrated even decided to write an article about it.
Very cool, Max. Yeah, I will definitely check that out. I want to thank you so much for your time tonight and bringing this up with us. I found this such a compelling story, and I get the impression we're going to be saying this guy's name for a very long time.
Well, you know what? That's the thing. If you're interested in hoops at all, and now's the time to start doing a little bit of homework on the guy because there's a ton of stuff on YouTube, obviously, and the message boards are really filling up as to where he's going to go for college next year. And, it's definitely an exciting time because as Canadians, we're always learning about the next big hockey star. But this is something new because it's about basketball this time.
If you could take 2 minutes and take off your basketball hat and put on your rock and roll hat for a second. And I want our audience to know that on Friday, March 1st, Max and his band, the Arkells, will be playing at the Corona Theater in Montreal. If you don't know their music outside of the songs that we play on this show, Max, can you give them a little push so that we see as many friendly faces as we can at this concert next week?
Last time we played in Montreal, the Oceaga weekend, we played at the festival, and then we did a surprise show at the Corona Theater. We're a rock and roll band. We like to pull out the odd cover here and there, everything from Springsteen to the Talking Heads to Motown. And if you like, you know, spirited and fun rock and roll, yeah, you should come to the show because that's what we do.
As it says on the Twitter feed, Arkell's Music, put on your dancing shoes and come to the show. I will be there. I can't wait. And we're going to have a heck of a time that weekend, Max.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it's going to be great.
Thanks again for last week in Toronto. It was really fun to be a Habs fan tiptoeing around the bowels of the ACC. I felt like everywhere I went, I had a snarky comment.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, well, I'm glad you were there.
It was a blast, man. Thanks so much, and we'll speak soon.
Talk to you soon.
Have a great one. Good night, Max. Thank you. There he goes, Max Kerman. Get your tickets through Evanko. Arkell's, March 1st, Corona Theater. Thanks to Max Kerman from Arkell's. This is The Kaufman Show. John Kakalakis coming up with a sports update. We'll be back. Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show. Just flying through this tonight, AJ?
Are we?
It feels that way for me.
Yeah, it is. It's going quickly.
I know we started later than we normally do.
We did.
But two great guests, one after the other. Jack Cordero, Max Kerman, Andrew Buchholz around the corner, about 20 minutes time. I am on Twitter. And you know what? So is Jay.
I am.
That's right. You're at J-Pub Radio.
At J-Pub Radio.
Well, now I feel like you need to do that for me because I'm just going to be like the Kaufman Show and it's not going to sound, it's not going to carry the weight.
As J-Pub Radio. At the Kaufman Show.
Amazing. One more time.
At the Kaufman Show.
Oh, damn. That's like music to my ears. Let's go to the phones. 514-790-1690 if you're out of town. And you know what? There's a lot of you out of town. They're listening to us in Chicago right now. They're listening to us in New York and not just on TSN.ca. But actually on the real radio.
Come on.
Jay, this thing goes so far now.
How quaint.
No. Quaint was 990.
It's the best way.
This is 690, baby.
Yes.
We're in the big leagues now.
Yes.
1-866-896-2546 if you're out of town. We are owned by Bell, so, you know, let us take care of it. Let's go to Jerry in Snowden. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, Dave.
How are you, sir?
Okay, I was waiting for you to call me again.
Well, you got one crack at me, and that was that.
got a schedule here.
I was actually going to call you back, but I figured you're busy. So.
Well, what can I do for you, man? What's going on?
There was something I wanted to discuss. You ever listen to somebody at a broadcast? Mitch Melnick was talking about it, but some of the Homer broadcasters.
Homer broadcasters, like Homer Simpson.
Yeah.
No, like guys who cheer too much for the hometown team.
Yeah.
Okay.
And was it a couple of years ago? When did the Canadians get swept by the Bruins?
Swept?
Yeah, fourth straight.
Not the last time around.
The last time was in seven. They were swept by the Bruins, I think, in 1994.
What did Jack Edwards do?
Yeah.
Oh, Jack Edwards. See, we were in D.C., right? In Washington, D.C.,
right? Right.
So we watched it, and unfortunately, we didn't get the Habs. It was a playoff broadcast. And the Bruins that year beat the Habs. Unless they weren't swept, but they beat the Habs. And Jack Edwards went...
Yes. Yeah, as he is wont to do.
Oh, you didn't hear him then?
No, I didn't.
He said, the Habs are history. They're gone. And yada, yada, yada. And you know what his reasons for it were?
What?
He watched the Habs beat his beloved Bruins when he was going up all the time.
That's right. Well, the Bruins' record in the playoffs against the Canadiens is atrocious.
I know that. If you go, all you have to do is, you're not probably old enough to remember... I'm not.
I got to tell
you about.
Too many men?
Was it 19? When did the Canadians win the Cup? Just before, when Al McNeil was the coach.
What, 71?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, there was one game
Charlie
one.
Ward, 71. What the hell's wrong with me tonight?
Yeah, okay. A lot of things flying out of you right now.
Game one of that series, at the end of two periods, I think the Habs were down 5-2. And I know people that called me up and said, you watching the game? I said, I am. And they said, no, we turned it off. The heck with that. So all these people I took note of, I remember my wife and I, we wrote all the phone numbers down. And after the game, the Habs won 7-5. And we called them all back.
Uh-huh.
And bugged the heck out of them.
Sore winners, if you will.
The Canadians, of course.
Right.
They came back and won 7-5. Yeah, that was the year they won in game 7 at Boston Garden.
But the thing with Homer broadcasters, and you know what? You said that you were listening to Mitch. Mitch is my mentor. And one thing that I learned from Mitch is, a great passion for music. In fact, we came in on Springsteen just now. I became a Bruce Springsteen fan because Mitch forced me to listen to it until I realized how good it was. And I will now very rarely watch a sporting event with the play-by-play. Very rarely. Tonight, the hockey game was on, but there was music going. I was cooking dinner. There was music going. I looked over. I could see the game. But for many other reasons,
actually,
you don't need to. You know, once
if you look at the history of the Canadiens broadcasters.
Yeah.
And I don't know how far back you go. I go back to Danny Gallivan.
No, I go to Dick Irvin.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm
32 years old.
Okay. So there was Danny. Yeah, but Danny Gallivan was around then.
I don't remember Danny Gallivan when
I was
a kid.
He passed away in 93.
Okay, but he wasn't calling games up to
that's
the end,
true.
Was he?
Yeah, that's true. No, he wasn't.
I mean, I have vague memories of Savardian Spinoramas,
you know,
which I think was him.
It was. Thought he was that good. They were using him for some broadcasts when I moved down there.
Oh, interesting.
And Dick Irvin was great.
Sure.
I used to see Dick when we used to go. When the Habs came, we went to watch the game.
But Jerry, I'm a Habs fan. I would not be surprised if somebody from the Canucks fandom or Leafs Nation or whatever the hell you want to call it said that Dick Irvin was a homer. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, the way that for the longest time, we always thought that Bob Cole had it in for the Canadians. When in truth, and we learned this from hanging out at your bar, Jay.
He's a Canadians fan.
He's a Habs fan.
Yeah. He grew up in Newfoundland watching the Canadians.
Right, but because of the bias that we had of that every Saturday night, no matter how bad the Leafs were on TV, and it was Bob Cole and Harry Neal, we just assumed that
and
he was predisposed
occasionally,
you know what that
to
from?
Hating the Canadians.
That's right.
That stems from the Hewitts, because when you went before Bob Cole, there was
Foster Hewitt.
Bill Hewitt, and they were biased towards the Leafs.
Well, again, I think this is part and parcel.
Jerry. Even when I grew up in Montreal.
Jerry.
Go ahead.
Jerry, thank you. I appreciate it, Jerry. There are a lot of broadcasters that are on the payroll of the team, which, I mean, and even here, I mean, not that I have any, I don't have any issue with the way that John calls the games, but you know that John, I mean, he, of course he does. And, well, otherwise he wouldn't be working here, right? We like to hold ourselves up to a pretty damn high standard at TSN 690.
He doesn't hide the fact that he's a Habs fan. He grew up as one.
Well, actually, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that. And I'm sure he hid that very well when he was doing Marley's games.
Yeah, most likely. But he's very forthcoming about it. I mean, his parents are from Quebec. So, you know, he was born and raised in Toronto. But
Jerry, if I had had the opportunity to call Expos games, then that would have been the pinnacle for me, and I would not have been able to hide it.
Dave,
thank you for the call, Jerry.
Dave.
Yes.
Are you mentioning the Expos again?
I do that sometimes.
Because it seems like some people are taking issue with it, you know?
With me mentioning the Expos?
I think I'm just, you know what? I'm going to go Simon Salikas on you right now.
Jay, it's about damn time you
did. That's what I'm going to do.
It's damn time.
Listen. I'm going to talk really fast so you can't cut me off. Kaufman. Kaufman.
Yes.
Why? Yes. Why? Do you have such a hard-on for the Expos?
Whoa!
The Bears are lights-out sick, bro. They're hardcore sick, Tony. Balls to the wall,
wait,
hardcore.
Dave, I'm not Tony.
Balls to the wall, hardcore sick defense, assed out, St. Dorothy, bro. Kaufman. Don't answer my question. I'll answer it myself. Tony, just throwing it out there, hard-on, lights-out.
Who the hell is Tony?
Lay it down, Campbell. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Insert opponent name here. Lights-out, sick, hard-on. Thank you very much.
Woo! That was something.
Thank you.
We're gonna clip that, and we're gonna put that in the TSN 690 Hall of Fame, and we're gonna let our bosses know that if Simon Salikas is ever sick, nobody has to know.
Just
Jay
put that
just
on
come
loop.
In. Jay can just come in and fake it. And wow, dude, are you okay?
I'm great.
How much cocaine did you just ingest in order to do that?
I do have an energy drink.
Across from Tony Montana.
I do have an energy drink here. I needed to get hyped up for it. That's for my buddy Simon.
I heard they were messing with us. I heard they were messing with us while I was on the train to Toronto.
Yeah, they messed with us a little bit. Yeah, I promised them I'd get it back, and I was going to forget about it, but he mentioned on air today that he was expecting me to get him back. I had forgotten about it. So I said, you know what? Why not?
I don't think you got him back at all.
Simon's my boy.
That was worthy of a, that was the equivalent of a.
Is he calling in right now?
I'm waiting for it. For one of Tuso's wax doubles. That was the equivalent of that. You just did the radio version of Madame Tuso's wax museum.
There
double.
It is. He's, you know what? He's my Chamonix brethren. And, you know, we chirp a lot in Chamonix. So that's how we grew up.
I'm a big fan of Mr. Salikas. And this
is the apology afterwards.
No. There's no apologies, Simon. That's how you sound, man. And that was amazing. Let's go back to the phones. And let's see what the chef had to think of that. Andrew in Montebello. Hello, sir.
That is the best Salikas I have heard. I mean, seriously, I don't think he's ever done better.
I honestly think Simon can't do it as well as that. That was something else.
Simon's going to have a really tough time tomorrow, and he's going to hear about it. Believe me, he will hear about it.
Good. And
leaving the clip on the desktop.
That's right.
So.
I have a feeling he'll be calling you pretty soon.
He'll call me out on the air tomorrow. He already called me out today and last week, so I haven't had a chance yet. Unfortunately, we're on only once a week, so we have limited access.
Yeah, but, you know, talk to our bosses because we want to be on more.
Yes.
I'm throwing that out there right now. If you guys like the Kaufman Show, if you like what you hear, what we bring every Monday night, tell people. Let's make this a thing.
Now, if your boss was on Twitter, it'd be a lot easier, but I don't think Mr. Views is.
No, he's not, but there are ways of getting in touch with people that aren't on Twitter.
Guys, just real quickly going on to last week's show. One quick word, bravo.
Thank you.
It was a great show. I actually didn't call in because I was getting a little emotional again. I know it's a one-year. It wasn't even the one-year anniversary, but just hearing Gary's daughter talk. I mean, I honestly heard Gary speaking.
I think we all did.
She carries herself in such the same manners that her father did. It's scary almost.
That's very interesting that you say that because I noticed that too. Just the tone of her voice and the way she spoke very slowly and very clearly, you know, with almost a sympathy, you know, I thought of that too. It's very interesting that you said that.
Great communicational skills.
Yep.
That her father was a master at. I mean, that was one of his high points. And it's funny you guys were saying earlier, like, Dave, you'd rather watch the game with the sound off?
Yeah.
I would so much prefer not even to watch the game, but just have a really, really good analyst and a good play-by-play call the game and let me not see all the bad parts in the game, because I'm watching the game and I'm just constantly seeing errors and errors and errors. And when you listen to the game, all you hear is good stuff or fairly good stuff. And then when you hear the goal, well, if you have to, you go back and you check it out afterwards. But John does an incredible job. And on the French side, I used to, before John actually came on, before you guys got the broadcast, excuse me, guys, it's a late night. This late show.
How do you think we feel?
Simon, is that you? You okay?
No, bro. No, seriously, bro.
Oh, God.
You don't do it like this in Chalmody, man. This is not how we do it.
That's it.
Okay.
It's my town.
Great show once again. Great music guest. And I'm trying to make sure I can get in to see the Arkells.
Good.
If I'm not going to be there, at least my daughter will be there. She's discovered the band and loves them. And great work as always, guys.
Thanks, Chef. I really hope you can make it, man. If you do, there's a beer with your name on it. I promise you that.
Thank you very much, boys.
We'll speak soon. Have a great night.
I got a good place you can get it, too.
You know, he makes the point about how he'd prefer to listen. And there are certain examples. I mean, I grew up listening to baseball on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was always a thrill. And if I'm watching a Dodgers game, I'll keep Vin Scully on.
You have to.
I'm not putting...
It's sacrilege to turn off Vin Scully.
Exactly. But, you know, Dwayne Kuiper and, is it John Miller in San Francisco? The team in Crook and Kuiper are fantastic. The Giants home broadcasters. There are a handful out there that are great. I personally, I don't know, maybe there aren't enough hours in the day, so I'd like to be able to multitask.
Right.
My favorite time to watch, do you remember La Soirée du Silence?
I don't think I've ever had a Soirée du Silence.
Back in the, I want to say 10, 12 years ago, there was a strike or a lockout or something at Radio Canada. And this was back when they had La Soirée du Hockey, the French hockey night in Canada. Before they lost the rights to RDS. And there was, I think it was the playoffs. You could correct me if I'm wrong. But they did games with just the ambient sound of the crowd and the ice. And they boosted the mics on the ice so the hits were louder. You could hear the skates cutting through the ice. And there was no play-by-play. And it was fantastic. Because you were sitting at home, and it had that same feeling as if you're sitting at the Forum or the Bell Center.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
So I would love to have
you would
that
hear the PA and all that.
Yeah,
you had the raw, announcer and
the raw feed of the Bell Center.
Right,
and it was fantastic. It's
very interesting.
I wonder how many people remember that La Soirée.
It's so retro.
De silence.
So retro.
Let's go back to the phones. Is that Peyton Manning on line one?
I think it is.
Oh no, it's Louis from Mercier. Close though. Close. Salut Louis.
Salut. How are you?
Bien?
Ça va très bien.
Good.
Hey, Jay, congratulations about the imitation of my good friend Simon. I mean, you forgot one thing.
Yeah.
You should have said, Peyton is the greatest of all time, and Jay Cutler sucks.
Yeah.
Wait, no, and he's not doing Louis. He's doing Simon.
I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I just wanted to take a little jab at him.
And when there's a snowstorm, it took him 2 hours and a half to go to Chamonix. Good for him. He shouldn't, you know, it's too bad because... When he said, when there's no snowstorm, it took him only 20 minutes from his job.
Well, to be fair, he was walking. I mean, give him some credit.
When is Simon's birthday? What is his date?
I don't know. You know what? It's actually not on the bulletin board here. It should be.
No, but Jay, you have to remember his birthday. And could you go to La Capsule Sportive and send him a big poster of my main man, Peyton Manning? The greatest of all time. I think that's the only thing he eats the most.
Yeah, I think I've even turned Simon's callers against him now.
You know what he's doing? He eats so much Peyton Manning, he goes in his basement and he throws darts at him.
I know. It's because Peyton Manning, he's not lights out. He's not lights out.
Bro.
Yeah. Why? Okay.
Okay.
That's enough of that.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Poor Simon.
The Kaufman Show needs to retain a certain level of dignity.
Yeah.
Here.
I know. We've lost it. I'm getting it so bad tomorrow afternoon.
Probably.
Is he on tomorrow? Simon's on.
Simon is on all the time.
And he's great at what he does.
That's
right. Did you hear that, Simon? He's great at what he does.
Better make sure that's part of the clip too, Jay. Yeah.
You know, one commentator was tough on me. It's Elliot Price. One way I talk about A.J. Burnett with Elliot Price. Boy.
Why do you bring up A.J. Burnett?
No, because I didn't like A.J. Burnett. When the Pirates they wasted $16 million a year. I don't think the Pirates are going to win. Well, it's baseball time, by the way.
I know, man. I can't wait. I'm so happy. That's why we had Chad Cordero on to start the show.
You know, know what, Dave, you're doing a great job about reminiscing of the Expos. I know, Jay, you were I don't, making fun of your buddy Dave, but the Expos, we can't forget the Expos.
And never.
Oh, no. The guys, 92, 93, 94, you were there.
I was.
Maybe 81, 82, you were two young guys.
I was.
So, but the 81 year when we went to go to the playoff with Gary, you know, Gary Carter, one of the most classiest person I've ever met. In my 30 years, I've done baseball, football, baseball. Do you think, guys, that Gary Carter was the most of the classiest person ever?
Louis, did you hear our interview with Gary Carter's daughter last week?
Yeah, last week, yeah. It was very emotional, yeah. This guy was so so great. I didn't meet Gary a lot of times, maybe four or five times. And one time he was at the Bell Center. They were honoring the Expo. You know when he was there with Dawson?
October 20th, 2006, I think.
When they lifted the banner.
Yeah, they lifted the banner. And he came up to my section. And I just told him, Gary, congratulations. You were an outstanding catcher. You always represented Montreal. And after that, he talked to me again. 15 minutes.
Yep.
This guy was outstanding. He talked about the fans, the city of Montreal. This guy, like everybody, he was so great. But you were talking about the commentators.
Yeah.
Vince Scully, well, maybe the all-time commentator about Jacques Doucet.
Yeah.
On the French side.
Sure. I mean, he invented the lexicon of baseball in French.
Yeah, you're right. And Dave Van Horn, two of the guys we follow the most 30, 35 years.
That's
and
right.
Dave Van Horn is still going on. How many years has been going, Dave Van Horn?
40 plus years.
42 years. And you're right, Dwayne Kuiper, when Barry Bonds was going on his record of Hank Aaron and 750, I liked Dwayne Kuiper.
Yeah.
And he's working also with Mike Kruko.
Kruko, that's it. I said Kruk, it's Kruko, thank you.
Kruko, he was a tall pitcher.
And yeah.
Those two guys were not great Giants player, but as a broadcaster, they have a great voice. And you're right. And in baseball, you have so many great. I like in football, Dick Enberg.
Yep.
Dick Enberg and
Dick Enberg. He also, you know, he's the home broadcaster for the San Diego Padres as well.
Yeah.
And he does tennis on. I grew up watching Dick Enberg do the U.S. Open and things like that.
I was like Pat Summerall too. I always did. I just liked the way, you know, touchdown Cowboys. You know, I just loved how it was all monotone, but you know, very soothing, like Vin Scully, just very soothing voice. You know. Brought the game to you.
Charlie Lapin tweeting in that Dan Shulman also should be in the conversation.
Sure.
Who's a great Canadian broadcaster
as
well. Does the Sunday night baseball games for ESPN. Louis, you know, I Jerry brought it up, and the point was not to slag on any broadcasters. Okay. I think he was just bringing up the point that there are some that have a bit more of a tendency to root for the home team. And for me, the example that always comes to mind is the radio guy for the Saints. When the Saints pulled off that crazy lateral play
I know.
To make the playoffs, and all they had to do was nail the extra point, and they missed it. And you can hear one guy in the booth just go, "No! They missed it!"
Everything is happening.
And you know, Louis, you jumped around a lot, so I am too. Thank you for your comment about the Expos. Jay was just teasing before. That was our in for him to do the little rant about Simon. Jay and I firmly believe that we need to keep and preserve the memory of the history of the Expos, how important that is.
Yeah, you're right about it.
And we will continue to. Louis, I want to thank you for the call. We got to stop for a news update, but please call anytime. Merci, mon ami. And that's our number one of the Kaufman Show. So we're going to take a break. John Kakalakis will bring you a sports update. You can bring that up. That's all right.
Yeah.
You can definitely bring that up. That is Escape is at Hand for the Traveling Man on the Kaufman Show.
Conversation on
Kaufman Show. We're back. I'm Dave. That's Jay.
That's me.
That's you. No, no backlash on the Twitter?
Not yet.
You're doing okay?
He's a hardworking man, so I don't think he's going to get at me.
I just love that his a bunch of his like faithful callers called in to, you know, proverbially pat you on the back.
Yeah. They didn't. I saw Louis.
I was kind of afraid they were going to call to give you some.
Yeah,
some
Louis.
Spiff,
Louis's a legend.
Yeah.
At this radio station.
Damn straight.
And I got a little nervous there. I thought I was going to get a kick in the ass from Louis, but no. It seems he has some harbored anger towards Simon as well. It's that whole Cutler Peyton Manning deal, I guess.
Yes, it's a rivalry.
Yes.
I wonder if how much time they spend talking about the smoking Jay Cutler.
Right. Nice.
Big fan of the smoking Jay Cutler Tumblr.
Right. I
have a feeling I probably saw that many, many months ago linked off of Andrew Buchholz's Twitter page. Andrew Buchholz is our next guest. He runs the CFL blog at 55 Yard Line CFL for Yahoo. He does CIS stuff as well. Also works for Awful Announcing and is one of my favorite media commenters on Twitter. It's been too long since he was on the show. I feel like it might have been... God, has it been a year? Was it the Simpsons show a year ago?
Yeah, it might be.
Wow. Andrew Buchholz, welcome back to the Kaufman Show.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
How are you?
Always fun talking to you.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Good, good. It's good to have you back. It's been too long, and we'll make up for some lost time, and we'll do it talking about a legend. I want to talk about Michael Jordan a bit with you. Mm-hmm. MJ had his 50th birthday, and first of all, as a child of the 80s, it was wonderful to see MJ back in the news this week. But you sort of contrasted two major stories that were written about Michael Jordan. One that came out this week through Outside the Lines ESPN, and then the other one from Sportsnet magazine.
Yeah.
A magazine whose name doesn't get said very much on TSN radio.
Yes, understandably. But what really stood out to me about these two different profiles, and I thought they were both amazing profiles, by the way. The ESPN one is by Wright Thompson, who's an amazing writer, and the Sportsnet one is by Brett Popplewell, who I'm also a big fan of. But what really stood out to me is they took very different approaches. The ESPN one was essentially Thompson went and he got really an incredible level of access to Jordan. He hung out with him at his place. He hung out with him and all his buddies. He watched Jordan watching current basketball games, essentially. And I think he presented a pretty good portrait of what Jordan's like now, how tough it is for him to deal with being so competitive and not really having a playing outlet for that.
Right.
I mean, the thing that really stood out in Popplewell's piece to me is it hit a lot of the same notes. It really showed what it's like for Jordan at this time, but I didn't have a single quote from him. He didn't talk to Jordan. He went to Carolina. He talked to some fans of the Bobcats. He talked to various people in the city about what it's like having Jordan running your team, essentially. And he did really a lot of great research, I thought, and really portrayed Jordan very well through comments he's made at various times, through various stances he's taken and so on. And so what really stood out to me is not so much that, one of these is great and the other one isn't, but just like the Thompson piece is something that everyone in journalism has always sort of admired, like this incredible level of inside access, what's going on, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
But with Popplewell's thing, it's next to no access to Jordan and his inner circle. And in some ways, I think it presents an even better portrait of him because of that. Because, the thing is, especially with a guy who's as competitive as Jordan, you've got to think he's committed to going out there and trying to win these profiles, essentially, right?
Sure, like, of course.
He's not going to behave the same way if there's an ESPN writer in the room as he is if it's just him and his buddies hanging out. And, I think Thompson does a good job of portraying that. I don't think his profile's, like, just covering Jordan in glory and saying he's the greatest person on the face of the earth.
Oh, no, if anything, you get quite the impression that he's an asshole, no?
Yeah, to a degree, certainly. But, I mean, the thing that stood out to me there is obviously there's going to be some favorable things towards Jordan in there as well, because so many of the people quoted in that piece are either Jordan himself or people who owe Jordan a lot, right?
So right.
Of course they're going to have good things to say about him. What really intrigued me about Popplewell's piece is I think it portrayed the same sort of complicated character, the same sort of guy who's having trouble channeling this competitiveness, and it did it without that insane level of access, which obviously you're only going to get if you're at an organization like ESPN or right. one of the other, the big ones, right? So, to me, it's not, oh, this is great, Wright Thompson's thing sucks. It's these are both good things, they're both valuable things, but the Popowell piece made me really hopeful for, I guess, journalism and writing overall. Because to me, that says to people, you can go out and you can do a great amount of research, you can write an incredible profile of a guy, and you don't necessarily have to make it through his PR people and get an exclusive sit-down with him.
Which to me, Andrew, that leads us to Frank Sinatra has a cold.
Yes.
Because yes, there are very few better pieces of magazine journalism written. And this is a Gay Talese piece from Esquire magazine in the mid-60s, where they sent Gay Talese to go interview Frank Sinatra. And he got the stock response, Frank Sinatra has a cold. And he did not get the access that, I don't know if he was promised or that he had expected. And yet still managed to paint one of the most complete profiles of Sinatra that had been written to date.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the profile that really started a lot of people thinking that, well, maybe you don't have to do it the traditional way. Maybe you don't have to go and nab an exclusive interview of somebody and get it on their terms and to hear what they have to say.
Well, and they allude to that in that story mm-hmm. because they talk about Sinatra sitting down with Walter Cronkite.
Yes.
And yet the questions are, you know, don't ask about this and don't ask about his association with the mob and don't ask about his philandering. And it changes the whole script. And I'll tell you, like, we had a professional athlete on off the top of the show, but it's the third time that we've had Chad Cordero on. And we've been very clear that the guy is incredibly candid with us. He doesn't hold back. And it's the exception to the rule. And I feel like with these people who are, whether it be a high-profile athlete or a high-profile musician, there's often a little bit of being guarded because you're managing an image.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And and I think that's even more so true today than it's ever been, really,
yeah.
because these guys have bigger PR armies than they've ever had. They're far more concerned about how what they say is going to be perceived. And, I think really, in a lot of cases, it leads to many athletes delivering comments that aren't necessarily terribly interesting because they're very worried about how it's going to be seen, what sort of repercussions it's going to have on them, and that's fair. I mean, to me, that just reinforces the importance of not everything in journalism necessarily needs to be an interview or needs to be an exclusive or needs to be spend a week or a month around this guy. I think there's a huge amount of value to those pieces, but you can also do some great stuff without ever talking to a person.
But it's tough, Andrew, because if your editor tells you to do a story on person X and you can get the access, then the automatic reaction is to go for that access and to go down that route.
Yeah.
What's to restrain a journalist from not doing that and saying, no, I'm going to go about this on a roundabout way and have it potentially be more complete?
Yeah, I'd say that's certainly true. And I think the really interesting thing there is I think sometimes it's not necessarily a question about the access, but about how you use that access. Because, I think in general, it's probably more useful to be able to ask somebody a question than to be told, no, you can't ask them a question.
Sure.
But I think the problem is a lot of people have concluded that if we have that access, then that's the story we've got to run. We've got to print whatever they say. And for me, it's more of, okay, well, if you have the access and if they don't say anything interesting, well, then maybe you go off and you do something different. Or you make the conscientious decision in the first place not to go using it. The bigger lesson really is just don't just print whatever an athlete tells you. Just make sure they say something interesting. And if they don't, then find another way to get the story.
How old are you, Andrew?
I'm 25.
Okay, so your memories of MJ are with Washington.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember the Bulls a bit, but towards the end.
Okay. Do you have that same, I'm 7 years older than you. Do you have that same kind of reverence for Jordan, or does it maybe Does it sort of trickle down to Kobe for you?
I think I still definitely have a lot of reverence for Jordan. I mean, if I was picking one NBA player who stood above all the rest, I think I'd still probably go Jordan. But I mean, the interesting thing for me, though, I think, is I think he is a terrific player, but everything I've read about him, including that Thompson piece, the Popwell piece, and everything else over the year, I mean, he sounds like a guy I wouldn't really want to hang out with.
Yeah.
And to me, the interesting thing is, like, how much is that a function of this insane competitiveness? Is that really a good thing on the court and a terrible thing everywhere else? So I think he's a fascinating figure, a great athlete, but not necessarily the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, and, you know, for the longest time, though, he was painted as, I mean, the Gatorade ads when I was young were, I want to be like Mike.
Yeah.
So he was put into this, he was put on a pedestal and made to be someone that he isn't. It's very interesting, though, that I can't imagine him without that competitive fire. It's that competitive fire that had him beating Kid Gilchrist in a one-on-one game last week. Someone who's 30 years his junior.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and exactly. Like, without that competitive fire, I don't think he ever would have made it as high as he did in the NBA. So, I mean, for me, it's not Michael Jordan is a horrible person, somebody everybody should hate. I think it's just we should recognize he's a complicated character. He's not necessarily somebody you want to look up to in every aspect of life, but he is an incredible basketball player.
So maybe don't show the kids Space Jam then, huh?
Yes.
Follow him on Twitter at Andrew Buchholz, Buchholz. Andrew, thank you so much for your time, man. Let's catch up soon.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
All the best. Thank you so much. There he goes, Andrew Buchholz.
If I hit him high, hit him high, hit him high, and you hit him low, hit him home. Remember?
What was that?
Remember?
Is that Red Meth?
Space Jam. The Monstars.
The Monstars. Oh, wow. No.
If I hit him high, hit him high. No?
No.
It was like it was a posse cut with every great rapper at the time, all in one song. It's like eight guys in it.
I'm pretty sure I watched that movie in the theaters, walked out of it, and collapsed into a snowbank with mono.
My goodness.
What was that? Was like, what, 15, 16, like 95, 96?
Something like
roughly
that.
Roughly around there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that the timelines work out.
Yeah. I was a little too old for that stuff.
What, mono?
No.
Or Space Jam?
Space Jam.
Oh, I was definitely too old
I never
old
got
for
mono.
It.
Not that I know of, anyway.
Yes, we are. We're knocking all knocking. We're all knocking.
Knocking on wood.
Jimmy, let's take a little break. This is The Kaufman Show. And now the phones are open to you. 514-790-1690, 1-866-896-2546. Mr. Bowie, play us out. '67's Aretha arrives.
Now you're speaking my language.
Might hear a couple more of these tonight.
Yeah.
Oh man, so good. All right, this is the Kaufman Show. We're back, and as we wrap things up on this wonderful show that we love to do so much, we always open the phone lines to you. Why? Because you bring it. You guys are smart. And we like having conversations with smart people. Our next guest, caller, wow, is famous for taking notes and calling into the show. So let's see what he can trip us up with today. Hello, Ron.
Yeah, hi, guys.
How are you?
Not bad, I suppose. Yeah, that was an incredible motor mouth by Jay.
Yeah, he's not bad. Eh?
I've never called him motor mouth, but that is my nickname for him. It just doesn't stop. Okay, let's clear up a couple of things.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Bring out the notes.
Let's clear up a couple of things.
Where did I screw up?
No, nobody. No.
I'm kidding.
You act about Peter Budaj. It is because he's Christian.
That he has Ned Flanders on his, really?
Well, he also has a cross, I think.
No, that is the part of the insignia for the flag of Slovakia, I believe.
No, he explained the mass.
Did he?
He did explain the mass.
Okay.
Last year. And he explained...
Oh, you know, and isn't Lionel Messi on the mass, too? The soccer player?
Yeah, he's a big soccer fan.
Yeah, I think it's Lionel Messi and Ned Flanders, which is just weird.
And I think there's a cross on it, okay?
Okay.
And he did say it was because he was a Christian.
Well, the cross maybe, but the Ned Flanders, that would be... If that's the case, we need to inform David Silverman, the producer from The Simpsons that we had on the show, because that would be a whole other level.
That I'm not sure about.
Jay's on it right now.
I don't remember what he said about Ned Flanders, but I could probably... You could probably Google it, because...
Yeah, I got it.
Jay's on it
right
now.
I got a report on it.
Go ahead, Jay.
Budaj, a devout Christian, is perhaps best known for having the depiction of Ned Flanders, a popular religious character from TV's The Simpsons, painted on the back of his mask.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. That is so cool.
He began wearing a mask with the character Altair from the popular game Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, I feel like Elias Tufaxis would know who that is.
He would.
He might have even voiced him.
Yeah. It could be. Imagine if it was.
It'd be wild.
How cool would that be? But you know what? Ron is right. Ron is absolutely right. And I said it as a joke. Or did you say it as a joke?
One of us did.
Yeah. Okay.
Clearly with tongue in cheek.
And okay. You know what, Ron? You're absolutely right.
I can assume it was you because
you
I'm
did
Jewish
your homework,
and I'd never say
yeah,
something
but I'm not
like
finished.
That.
I'm not finished.
Well, and we're not kicking you out.
Great. You keep going, Ron.
Boston Montreal was game two, not game one, game two. Canadians lost the first game.
Okay.
And they were losing 5-1. Okay, I'll never forget that.
What year are we talking about? Oh, we're back to 71.
71.
Okay.
It was a Thursday night.
Okay.
Okay, my father said they're finished. He went to bed. and I don't know, I just couldn't give up, and I watched it, you know. And the rest was it. Well, yeah, we had Ken Hu and literally, we didn't know who this guy was.
Some law student. What
no,
does he know?
No, we didn't
right?
know who he was.
Yeah.
We really didn't know who he was.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because you had Roger Chanavachon.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sitting on the bench.
Jean Beliveau's final year, and
that's
he
right.
goes out with the Stanley Cup
so,
championship.
You know, like, you know, and Boston finished 30 points ahead of us. They had incredible scoring records that they beat, you know, more than anybody else. I mean, you know, with Bobby Orr and Esposito and Cashman and Hodge.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, they had an incredible team. But we beat them. And going back to what you were talking about, you know, like watching sports or whatever, I remember listening to the Astros games on the radio, on a little radio, you know, like, and especially when you listen to the West Coast games. You know, listening to the West Coast games, right?
Oh yeah, well,
you know, like
for me, it's
out in L.A. and whatever.
For
right?
me,
like,
Ron, it was
like
it was
they
listening.
They go way over, right?
For me, Ron, it was listening to the West Coast games with, and at the end, it was Terry and Elliot. I was in my early 20s, and hearing Terry Haig and Elliot Price, I would sit on my balcony till I don't know 1-2 o'clock in the morning, just listening to these guys out west, and yeah, they could paint a picture. And it was wonderful. But I think, at least when I was talking about it before, I was speaking more about television. Baseball on the radio is a magical thing. I wish we could have more of it here.
It is. That's what I was going to say. It is magical. Because, see, the thing was, I'm going back way back now. I'm going way back. Because I had to get up to go to work the next morning. Hmm. But, you know, I brought the phone. You know, I brought the transistor in my bed. But
awesome.
You know.
Awesome.
Try to fall asleep, okay, when you're in the 14th inning.
Impossible.
And you got Bill Stoneman who pitched into the 12th inning against I don't remember who, and you know, you've got to find out who's going to win the game.
Of course.
You know, it was nothing.
You need closure.
You had to find out who was going to win that game. You can't fall asleep. It's like this is next to impossible.
Remember when the Expos games were on CIQC? It was AM 600. Ron, do you remember that?
On your transistor?
On your transistor radio.
No.
No? Okay. It was, I'd say it was early 90s. Like the 94 Expos.
I was in the hospital for most of the 90s.
Oh, goodness.
And
so you missed the entire grunge movement?
So I listened to it all on the French radio stations, because most of the people in Notre Dame Hospital were French, and at the readaptation hospital where I was, they were mostly French.
So you had Jacques Doucette.
So yeah, I listened to all the games in French. Heard Elliot.
That was still in the Dave Van Horn days. But for me, my memory of that, Ron, was that CIQC, when it wasn't sports talk, was country music. So I was a kid, and I used to fall asleep listening to the late ball games and the post game shows, and then I'd wake up in the morning, and the radio would still be on under my bed, under the pillow, with country music playing. And that was where I got to learn about country music as a child. I would wake up to it and start scheming and plotting and figuring out how I'd be able to not go to school the next that day.
Wake up to country music. I'd rather wake up to my alarm.
School is one thing, you know. But, you know, like even when the Expos had their opener, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way we could get out of school.
Oh, you see, I went to St. George's, and they gave us the afternoon off for opening day 1994. Bless you, Mr. Officer.
69 in 69, okay, opening game.
Uh-huh.
All right. We had to give our attendance in every class. And... you know, unless you were sent home by the nurse, you know, your parents got a phone call.
Right.
So, you know, so there was no way you could get out.
Yeah.
You know, but you see, we were lucky. We had a really good homeroom teacher, and he knew that was a momentous occasion, right? So of course he brought in the television. Of course we watched the game, the whole class. You know, so it was a shared experience. We certainly weren't going to miss that.
I wish I was around in those days. I have to say, I feel like I missed so much, and I guess that's one of the reasons I have such a propensity to continue to talk about it. Right?
You know, you got so much to look forward to, and they may come back. You know.
Hey, man, I'll tell you what. If they are to come back, then all of the different people that are angling to try to bring them back need to sit down in a room and realize that if they don't get together on it, that it's never going to get anywhere.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, you can't be working across.
It can't be eight different groups trying to bring baseball back.
It has to be one thrust. And that's what it was when we got them. It was just basically one group, and they got, we're going to get a ball team.
Ron, one of my favorite lines of all time is from the song that we're gonna play out right now, and I think it holds true. Kids, stay in school, but learn more from a 3-minute record. Thank you, Ron, for the call.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Take care. Bye.
This is the Kaufman Show. We're going to pay some bills. Be right back.
I'm so tired. I haven't slept a wink. I'm so tired. Is on the blink. I wonder, should I get up and fix myself a drink? No, no, no. I'm so tired. I don't know what to do. I'm so tired. My mind is set on you. I wonder, should I call you? But I know what you would do.
Welcome back. I like this song. It mellows us out. The way that Deadlines pumps us up.
Right.
This mellows us
out. I'm surprised you're playing this.
Because it's the Beatles, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we haven't played any Stones tonight.
No.
I'm in trouble.
What's going on?
I don't know. I was listening to the Stones earlier.
You're being turned to the
once
dark side.
Once in a while. Once I just get a
I'm
an
happy.
Inspiration.
I love the Beatles.
I hate them.
It's just John Lennon.
No, it's the Beatles.
John Lennon by himself?
Yeah, it's the White Album.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is, of course. What am I talking about?
Yeah, this is a great song.
I'm going insane, you know I give you everything I've got for little peace of mind. I give you everything I've got for little peace of mind.
All right, let's go to the phones. I don't want to make everybody jealous, but this guy's our favorite caller. I mean, who's kidding who, right?
You're playing favorites there, Kaufman.
Well, that's exactly what I'm doing. I just said he's our favorite caller.
I'll say he's our best caller.
Whoa, that's even worse.
No, because I don't prefer. He's just a good caller.
What I like is that most Kaufman shows end with a call from Mike from St. Louis.
He almost knows when to call in and say, you know what?
He's got his finger on the pulse. And,
right.
And God damn it, I appreciate it.
Or he just got off of work. One or the other.
Yeah. Let's say hi to Mike. How are you, Mike?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. You feeling all right?
Yeah, you guys are embarrassing me. It's good it's late at night. None of the other callers will get jealous.
Everybody's asleep.
Wouldn't be surprised.
No, it's not a knock against anybody. It's just that week in, week out, you bring it. You thoughtful, intelligent. Never mess around, always to the point, and frankly, you sound like a real nice guy.
Oh, Dave, instead of putting Wayne Bue's name on that check, I got to put yours in. Terrible. I'll have to cancel a check.
What's going on, man?
Not much. I heard you playing the Beatles there. I was going to ask you, if you're starting a band today and you have a choice between Paul McCartney or John Lennon, who do you pick to go with you if you can only choose one?
Oh, God. That's a tough one, eh?
Tough question, eh?
I mean, I'm a sucker for the McCartney cheesiness, but I think we all know who the better songwriter was.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's something, I mean, short of Little Richard, nobody can do those woos better than McCartney.
Yeah, they both are.
Not bad, AJ.
Yes, no,
all right, all right.
I'm not the only one who can do impressions.
There you go, I'll work on it.
Yeah.
Both are stunning. I was going to call
my
you.
Laval impersonation sucks.
No,
I was going to call you listening about Michael Jordan and the interview you just had.
Yeah.
You know what struck me about Jordan, even when I was a kid? I remember there was some pressure on him from the black community to be more of a leader and be more outspoken, and he was always very quiet about those things.
Yeah, you remember what his response was?
Mm-hmm.
It was Republicans buy sneakers, too.
That's right. That's it. And you know what I got the impression from Jordan, even now, is that he was never going to be that guy. He wasn't going to be a Muhammad Ali type that they wanted him to be, something like Tiger Woods, always giving stock answers. Like, he was the first real slick athlete who was packaged and marketed right.
Mm-hmm.
But underneath it all, the one thing you get about Jordan is this. He's good at one thing, being a basketball player, and that may be it in his whole life. He may never be a success as a father, as a son, as a businessman, as a basketball executive, as a baseball player.
As a golfer, as a gambler.
That's right. There's only one thing he's good at, and I think that the problem is we all projected our own expectations on him. Everyone wanted him to be something, wanted him to be the guy you saw on the ads or in the movies. You know, you wanted him to be more, and that's just not who he is.
It sounds so cheesy, Mike, but we all wanted to fly like him.
Yeah, I mean, we dreamed of it, and you know, like how I projected on that with Gary Carter and how I told you I was disappointed that maybe his teammates didn't like him.
Right.
And so we have these hurt feelings about things that really don't involve us. And so I look at Jordan now and his 50th birthday's passed, and they even mentioned about his Hall of Fame speech being kind of bitter. He's a bitter guy. He's not a nice guy. It's okay. He's a great athlete, and that's where it ends.
Yeah. You know? I mean, to be fair, he's had, for a guy that was ordained as basically the Pope, he's had a rough run.
Right. And
the murder of his father was very difficult.
It's not only that. This kind of fame, which is way beyond...
Oh, it's the stratosphere. Yeah.
This is way beyond anything that we could even possibly conceive. Mm-hmm. Can distort your personality to such a degree. I recently met somebody who is extremely famous, and I'm trying to have a down-to-earth conversation with this person. And then they're talking and talking and talking, and then I'm thinking in my head as they're going on, and I'm realizing, oh, that's right, you're not normal. You're not normal. You're not normal.
Jay, because, it's Anakin Slade.
Well,
jeez.
He's, you know, that's his problem, you know? But, I mean, I was talking with this person, I'm saying, yeah, you're just, oh, that's right. You know, your mind has been distorted. Your personality is, you're not like me. You're not normal.
No.
You know, you're just, because of all the attention.
Can I ask what profession, what field this person was in?
Was an actor.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was, actually wasn't recently, it was a little while ago. But anyway.
Well, now, okay, who was it?
Huh?
Who was it?
No, I'm not going to say.
Okay.
I'm not going to say. Fine. It's not cool.
Fine. Can we make it up then? Can you pretend, like, was it Sir Laurence Olivier?
no, but almost an equally good
as
actor.
Was it Sir Richard Attenborough?
No, it was. Why are you naming
all? Was it
somebody
was knighted?
No, it wasn't anybody who was knighted.
All that I'm out. I don't know.
That's it? You didn't try John Gielgud and...
Sir John Gielgud.
Sir John Gielgud, yeah.
Exactly.
Sir Sean Connery. No, yeah. And
Sir Paul McCartney.
Sir Paul McCartney, yeah. They just knight anybody nowadays,
damn
don't
straight.
They? Yeah, everybody's knighted. Sir Mick Jagger, are you kidding me? Of all people.
Has that happened yet?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he's knighted.
Mick was knighted. I didn't know that.
Yes, he was.
Wow.
Sir Keith Richard as well.
No.
Yeah. They're both knighted.
I almost said a word I can't say on the radio.
Dude, that was funny.
You ever read about that? Keith was so upset when Mick got knighted. I mean, it's beyond anything you can imagine. Have you read Keith's book?
I did. I read Keith's book. I loved it.
Those guys are the best.
And I'll tell you, I've said this a couple of times on air, but the way to read Keith's book is with YouTube open in front of you so that every time he mentions a song and
That's
starts
right.
talking about how he crafted it, you can just play it. And it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Was it the Satisfaction and Brown Sugar that are the same? I can't remember. It was Satisfaction and another song that are basically the same things, just à l'envers. You know, you flip it and it's Brown Sugar. You flip it again and it's Satisfaction.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of cool.
Bump, 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 ba-na-na-na. Yeah, okay, I get it. I have no idea what you're talking about. I have no idea.
I just wanted to make you hum Brown Sugar on the radio.
Yeah, well, I'll do
Twist your rubber arm, huh?
Yeah.
Mike, you going to make it to the show next week?
Actually, funny enough, my wife wants to go see that awkward Rock of Ages shows at the Bell Center.
Oh, that is awkward.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
So awkward.
She's purchased tickets for us.
Don't tell me on Friday night, March 1st.
Friday night, March 1st.
Son of a bee.
I asked my brother-in-law to come with me. He wanted to go see the Arc House, too. He's a big fan. And
is this one of those things where you could potentially go to both?
Out.
No,
oh,
go,
yeah,
go sneak out.
Both.
Come on, go to both.
Go to both. That may be an idea.
You know, like the Rock of Ages show at the Bell Center. That's fairly vanilla. It's going to be what, 7 to 10, something like that. I'd imagine the boys don't hit the stage till 10:30, 11 o'clock.
So that may be something I would actually look into.
Okay.
That would be even more enjoyable.
All right.
Honestly, you know. And the other thing I was going to bring up to you, Dave, as well, too, I wanted to thank you last week for Bell Let's Talk. I know that you had to write a few texts to people who seemed to not get the idea of what the day was about.
What do you mean?
I noticed that some people were not putting the hashtag on, and they were trying to make a stance against big business.
Yeah, well, I think there were some people that
I don't know. Where their mind's at.
I think it's more than that, actually. I don't think it's just about, you know, standing up to Bell. I think it was this idea that mental health should be part of the dialogue 365 days a year, and why is it that only on this one day do people suddenly care? And my answer to that was because every time I put this hashtag down, a nickel is going towards this charity.
Exactly.
We can talk about it, and frankly, we do talk about mental health issues on this show. I can understand how it doesn't rule the roost all day, every day, but if you can tell me that by throwing a simple hashtag somewhere, that almost $5 million is going to be raised that wouldn't be going to mental health initiatives in Canada, I'm all for it.
Yeah, don't blame big business here. Blame yourselves.
That's right.
Are you such a sheep that it takes a big company to tell you when you should be donating and thinking about issues?
That's it.
You know? It's easy to blame big business, but you know what? I'm a libertarian when it comes to that.
It was a wonderful initiative.
Blame yourself.
I liked that all the people at the Score were using Bell Let's Talk as their hashtags, and they're owned by our sworn enemy.
It's sworn.
Hatfields and McCoys, yeah. Okay? Capulets and Montagues. Yeah. And they were on it. And I thought that showed that this is bigger than
those petty things.
Yeah.
I mean, I had the same conversation with a person in the morning. I don't know who he is, but I read his profile. But anyways, he has some exposure, but not much. He has his followers, maybe 2,000 or 3,000. But in any case, he made the same point, saying, you know what, I'm not going to put it down. This is something we should have every day. I said, listen, Bell, let's be honest. Bell has a bully pulpit. They could be saying, we're going to do this once a year for multiple sclerosis, and we would do it.
Mm-hmm.
Say it once a year for cancer, and we would still do the hashtag. But they chose that. And he said, well, I have solutions. Yeah, you have solutions. You don't have a bully pulpit.
Right.
Let's be honest. You know, you can reach 3,000 people and they can reach 30 million.
But it's growing. And what I thought was the coolest is that last year when it was done, it wasn't done with the same enthusiasm, at least from me or Jay or across the board at the station.
Right.
And they raised $3 million.
Listen, these things,
where's it going to be next year?
That's right. These things take time. They grow. It gets better. And the word gets out, and I thought it was criminal for people to purposely leave that out when they had an opportunity to basically do nothing and raise money for a cause.
That's it. And every time that I forgot, somebody would remind me. Simon Salikas actually sent me several texts that day being like, what's wrong with you? You keep forgetting the hashtag. Hashtag Bell Let's Talk.
It's because Simon's a good guy.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm just making sure that I'm not...
Jay's not going to help.
Yeah. It's not going to help, huh? Yeah.
I heard that, Ryan, and it was funny. And truthful. But don't get out of it now.
It's too late. It's all over for me. All over but the crying.
Careful, Mike. That's going to go on the clip that we're sending to them as well.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you also, Dave, before I let you go, the Tragically Hip show that you saw.
Oh, man.
Did they play a lot of the new stuff? Or?
No, I would say there were maybe only 4 or 5 new songs.
You only had 4 or 5 bathroom trips? Or?
No, I don't. Come on.
I always leave. I always leave during a new song.
No, well, I know.
I'm like, I'll listen to it later.
I know all the new songs. I mean,
yeah,
that album
you do.
Came out in October. I've listened to it a billion times.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I think look, it was a very special night for me. I got to stand and watch the Hip from backstage with Jean Gomeshi 3 feet to my left.
That's cool.
Rachel McAdams was nearby. It was like a who's who of Canadian. It was a Canadian hodgepodge of who's who and me. And again, so cool of the boys in the Arkells and especially Nick Dyka and Max Kerman, just to see how much I appreciated it, to know that even in this, it was quite the busy day for them.
Yeah.
Pretty much a hometown show opening for the biggest band in Canada.
That's right.
At, if not the most important arena, then we'll call it the second most important arena.
Yeah.
And to let me be a part of that, I mean, I got to hang out with them after the concert, and the whole Wayne's World thing with the backstage passes, and I'm flashing them. Pardon me. Straight out, the We're Not Worthy to Milwaukee with Alice Cooper. It had all the feelings of that. And then towards the end of the night, we finally left the bowels of that building at about 2:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And the Leafs had played in Carolina that night.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we were leaving, the equipment had already made its way back to the Air Canada Centre.
Wow.
And I tweeted out a photo of the Maple Leafs dressing room with their equipment sitting right there. And I felt like a super spy, man. It was just the coolest feeling in the world to walk around this building that so many people have such reverence for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of doing it with this tongue-in-cheek kind of attitude. Like, oh, well, it's the Leafs, you know.
Yeah. Well, this was that slight...
I'll tell you what was the coolest, though, was that the dressing room, the locker room that they had access to was, I think it was the visiting team's lockers.
Mm.
And there was a set of showers and like the washroom area with the showers. I have never seen shower heads so high.
Yeah.
Because they're for basketball players.
That's right.
My God, man. You stand in that thing and you look like, I felt like I was 3'2".
Dave, you were really doing some spying, eh? You were, you were.
Yeah, he went all the way into the showers.
I know that.
What
building...
kind of plumbing equipment do they have in here?
No, it was.
I need to know.
I can honestly say in pretty full confidence that I did something that the Maple Leafs have never done, which is drink champagne in the locker rooms at the Air Canada Centre.
Ouch. Wow.
Is that too far?
No,
okay.
Not really.
Good.
It's never too far.
And truthful also. This is a hard master, you know.
Well, yeah, there was a photo, I don't know who it was, Teeter Kennedy or something, with the cup, a black and white photo in the hallway there. And it just, I thought to myself, well, that's, you know what? No, I'm not going to start doing this about the Maple Leafs. They have enough.
No.
I did it too when I went to the ACC to see the basketball game.
Yeah.
The first thing my cousin says is, look up at the rafters. And I'm like, who are these guys? What names are those on the wall? It's nobody's. Take these things down. I don't recognize half of those guys who the Leafs. They don't retire the numbers. What do they call them?
The Ring of Honor or something,
you know,
like that.
Whatever.
Isn't it?
Take it down.
I will say. And the one thing you can guarantee when you go see the Tragically Hip in Toronto at the Air Canada Centre, they will play 50 Mission Cap.
Yeah, that's
and that's
right.
Not a song that gets played a lot in Montreal.
That's right, because the last time I saw them here in Montreal, they didn't play it, and I was upset.
Well, it was very cool the way that they put the spotlight on the Bill Barilko retired number.
Oh, that's cool.
During the song. So the light was shining up into the rafters the entire time.
And Mike, I can guarantee you, when you go to see Rock of Ages, you will be surrounded by a lot of white people. Just warning you ahead of time,
yeah,
okay?
Mike, it might be like a Habs game or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Just throwing that out there.
Oh. To be fair, though, if you make it to the Corona, I don't know if it'll be much different.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Yeah.
I've been a lone wolf for a long time.
I was going to say, I'm sure Mike's used to that already.
Mike, thanks so much for the call, man.
Thanks, guys. Have a good evening.
You too.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. See, ladies and gentlemen, the guy brings it.
He brings it.
We got one response on Twitter from Fifth Line Center. That's probably what I would be if I was a hockey player.
Fifth Line Center?
Fifth Line Center.
Yeah.
Easy answer to Mike's question, Paul McCartney, because John Lennon's dead.
Oh, jeez.
Rough.
I'm pretty
tough,
sure.
Tough crowd, eh?
Kind of a hypothetical thing, I was assuming. But,
well, Tarek, anytime you want to call in sober, you call in sober.
Wait, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he just, I would have called in, but I feel you guys frown upon late night one too many drink callers.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes those can be the most fun.
Well, yeah. Why do you think we're on late at night? You know, there's a lot of people who think Paul McCartney's dead, too. So it doesn't really make a difference at this point.
Yeah, but that's only because they play the record backwards.
Right. Turn me on, dead man. Did you ever do it?
No.
I did it.
Really?
Yeah.
Which, it was the White Album, wasn't
it? Was the
it?
White Album. Yep.
Hmm.
Yep.
Maybe it was that song. Maybe it was
Took
I'm
my
so
dad's
tired.
Album. I heard the whole thing. I looked it up. You know, well, we didn't have internet back then.
No.
Put it on. Had the record player put it on. Turned it backwards slowly. I'm like, cool.
Still have a record player?
No, I don't.
I'm in the market for one right now.
You're in the market for one?
I am. I have, I've started to build a collection of records and don't have anything to play them on.
Dave, are you going hipster on me? Are you going to buy a record player?
Okay, if I buy an old one, does that make me a hipster?
If you buy an old one, yes.
So if I buy a new one?
DJ. I don't
no.
know. No. No, you know what?
No.
I was thinking about getting a record player too. I really was.
You know what? I've got sticky fingers on vinyl. I've always wanted it. I finally picked it up a couple of years ago. The Andy Warhol cover with the fly.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would like to play it. I have Day for Night on vinyl. My favorite all-time Tragically Hip album. I would like the opportunity
That's cool.
to play. Yeah, I know. I've got some pretty cool ones. I've got a Wilson Pickett Hey Jude 45.
Nice.
Yeah.
I got Dark Side of the Moon, Led Zeppelin 4.
There you go. Wouldn't it be cool if we could play these?
Thriller. I have Thriller.
They sound... You have Thriller.
I have
That's
Thriller.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is.
That's awesome.
Not even scratched.
All right, we need a record player and we got to have a record player.
Yeah, let's do it. You convinced me. I want to be a hipster too.
Got to say, this was, back in the day, the studios for Sean.
Yes, it was.
A lot of records got played in this room, man.
Yes, it did.
Oh, boy. This was a fun one tonight, Chad.
Yeah.
Always, as we said to Mr. Kerman much earlier in the show, you can hear my smile.
Yeah.
And
well, that's one of the things you get taught when you do voiceover, is if you're doing a commercial and you want to sound upbeat, smile when you're talking it in, because you sound a lot happier
when your heart is breaking.
When your heart is breaking.
Don't worry, Jay. We're gonna be.
I'm good.
We'll be
good.
Back. We'll be back next week.
Yes,
everything
we will.
Be fine, and we'll bring it like we always do. This has been your favorite radio program, The Kaufman Show.
Listen up, kid, it's not what you think. Stayed out too late, had a little too much to drink. Walk home across the bridge when the marquee shut down. There's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house if your house burns down. There's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel, we're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. Do you hold a grudge anyway? Because it's fun. Davey and me, face down in our suit, some French restaurant, I saw Riviere de Loup. Last night at a tour, we burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
Listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll be back next Monday night.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?